Well, welcome everybody. This is Ron Sattermo from Triathica.com. We've got a very special host with us, guest host, Russ Jones, an old friend of mine. And when I say old, I do mean old. He's in my age group, so that makes him pretty much a dinosaur in the sport. And we're going to get into his athletic background as well as his coaching philosophy here in a minute. And you might hear a sort of a waterfall type noise in the background. That's actually the toilets running in the restrooms at Oz's apartment building. So please forgive that. I'm joking. It's one of those water features. But so you might hear a little something in the background. So anyway, say hello, Russ.
Hello, everybody.
Russ, in the event that you don't know, Russ has been, and I'm going to let him elaborate on his entire athletic background, but Russ is an amazing triathlete, and I'll give you my little spin first before I get into asking him a bunch of questions. But Russ and I are in the same age group, and when I started really competing a lot in triathlons probably about 10 years ago here in Southern California, I kept seeing this name at the top of the age group list, Russ Jones, Russ Jones. I mean, he won literally every race that I entered, and he was at, you know, pretty much all the races. So eventually I met him, and it was at one of the races, and we were standing near the expo. You probably don't remember this, but I remember it distinctly. And I was there with my old Kestrel bike. It was a road bike that I had put some aero bars on, and Russ looks over, and he's looking at my bike, and I knew who Russ was at this point, because I'd seen his name enough, and I said hello, and he looks at my bike, and he goes, you know, you really ought to take that off your bike, and he pointed to something. I think I had my tire repair kit on the bike, you know, my little bag. You ought to take that off, my bento box. You ought to take that off. You ought to take that. So he pretty much told me to strip all this stuff off of my bike because it'd make me faster. So that was my first personal introduction to Russ. And you know what? I race with very minimal stuff on my bike now, thanks to him. So thank you for that, Russ.
You're welcome.
Okay, so let's talk about your athletic background first, so everybody kind of gets an idea of who you are and where you've come from, and then I'd like to graduate to your coaching business now. But I know when you were in your youth, you were an amazing runner primarily, right? I mean, you really sort of started running and then moved into biathlon at that time, is that right?
Yeah, when I was 15, I played football, and a little background here, I got started in running, and I used to always win the quarter mile laps on the freshman football team. So the cross country coach, why don't you go out for cross country? The guys around you are a lot bigger and you're gonna get a lot of beating from 6'4", 250 pound guys, being a guy 5'8", and 140. So I heeded his advice. I went out for track, I was a quarter miler, and then I went out for cross country as a sophomore. And by the end of the year, I was the number one man in cross country. From there,
as a sophomore, you were the number one guy beating all the juniors and seniors?
That's correct.
Oh, they must have loved that.
So that was my passion. I just progressed. By my senior year, I ended up running a 9:10 2 mile in high school, winning the state championship, which got me a full scholarship to college. And college highlight, our team was second in the country in cross country. And from there, I dropped out after 2 years, joined the Navy, was on the Navy track team. And that's where I kind of got into my training of less is more, of training quality over volume. There was a period I was running 100, 110, I even got up to 140 mile weeks.
Wow.
One of them actually was just wore my body down, but you know, I was running like 230 range, but I wasn't getting any faster. So about a year or two, I started to have, you know, family, and my time kind of went down to be able to run that kind of mileage. So then I dropped my mileage down to about 70 or 80, So instead of running 230s, I, you know, got down to 221, qualified for the Olympic trials.
Yeah, we're talking about marathon. Now.
Marathon
time, yeah.
Yeah, got down to 221 at Marine Corps on a pretty tough course there. I was second military. I beat all the Marines, so that was pretty cool being a Navy guy.
Cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I was on a roll that fall. 6 weeks later, I felt great. Went down to Alabama at Rocket City and ran a 218 marathon and went through the half in 107, went through the 20 mile mark in 143. So I was actually on 214 pace and I pulled my right calf. So I basically had a hobble the last 10K. But I just wanted to, up to the first 20, had a great race. And yeah, bottom line, I ran that 218 on 70 miles a week. So ever since then, I adopted the philosophy of less is more, trained high quality, low volume, and I adopt that now since I'm in my triathlon part of my career.
So I mean, 70 to 80 miles a week is nothing for a marathon guy, right? I mean, that's not a lot of miles.
No, most world-class marathons, I say 95% of them run 100 plus mile weeks. The Kenyans run 120 to 140. Ryan Hall, who's America's best marathon. But they're running a lot faster. They're running sub-210s now. 30 years ago when I was running my fast times, you know, the bulk of really good world-class marathoners were in that 212 to 214 range.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
So, okay, and I know at this point, you're not running, they call them biathlons back then, not duathlons. Had you started biathlons at this point?
What got my triathlon / biathlon career, I was hit by a car in 1983. Because I'd run the 218 in 1980, and my goal was to make the 84 Olympic team. But I was hit by a car in 83, and after that, my knees were never the same. I cut my thigh. In medical terms, they call it transected, which basically I cut my right thigh in half, almost down to the bone. So after that, I could never run the same. I went from being like a national world-class runner now to like being a good local runner. In terms of time, I went from running 5-minute miles to maybe running 5:20 a mile. But at that level, that 20 seconds was huge. So then for rehab, I did a lot of biking. And from there, you know, I was a lifeguard in college. I started doing some triathlons. But my main sport back in the mid-80s, late 80s, early 90s was biathlons, now called duathlons. And I had a very successful biathlon career. And biathlons back then were actually a lot more popular than they are now. Most of them I did at least had 500 people up to 1,000 people, especially the New York Biathlon Series. And the New York Biathlon Series, they had a race in each borough. And it was accumulation of points and great races. They closed all this highways down under the Brooklyn Bridge and Central Park. And I won that series, gosh, about 7 years in a row. And I had lots of sponsors. And that was my little niche in life. I was, you know, this isn't being boastful, I was the top biathlete on the East Coast. The only guy that would beat me back then would be a guy called Ken Souza, who was considered back then Mr. Duathlete, Mr. Biathlete. He was almost on the Mark Allen stratosphere of the name recognition back then.
And did Kenny always beat you? Did you guys trade off or what was the...
No, Kenny was a full-time pro. He consistently beat me by about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. I was about 30 seconds slower in the first run. He put about a minute on the bike, another 30 on the second. But at that level, I was close enough to him to make it a very what I call a very profitable hobby. And I had young kids, young family, and that was another reason I only ran maybe 30, 40 miles a week at that time and biked about 100. And Kenny was doing triple amount of that mileage. And I held my own considering all the other obligations I had in life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned Mark Allen. You raced against Mark Allen once, right?
Yeah, that was probably, yeah, this is where my lessons were. I tell, this is the one story I always tell people, that where quality and short, intense, hard workouts, you can compete, at least in the shorter events, against pros. If you're a working person, you know, you have family, you're working a lot of hours. But that little background, Mark, full-time pro, winning Nice, considered the world's best triathlete ever. You know, no family, no kids. All he had to do was train. And here I am, you know, working 50, 60 hours a week as a letter carrier, at two little kids. You know, I only had maybe max of 10 hours a week to train. So how do I beat Mark Allen? So I'm thinking, well, I have to train short, hard, and fast, and intense, because that's the only way I can compete with pro-level triathletes. And actually in that race, by the way, actually I beat Brad Kearns. He was actually third in the event. He was the top ranked triathlete in the world at that time, or third, next to Mark Allen. And I ended up second in the race next to Mark, about 1 minute behind him. But considering the circumstances and the parameters of my training and obligations, to be only 1 minute behind Mark was a feather in my cap and a feather in my training concept of just training very intense and maximize the hours that you have to train. You can't go out what I call, you cannot go out there and do slow methodical miles. Because if you run or bike or swim slow methodical yards or miles, you're gonna race slow methodical. So to race fast, you have to do interval speed work, because if you race and train fast, if you train fast, it's easier for your body to adapt to racing fast, and you will race faster.
Yeah. To kind of continue on your athletic background for a second, I remember it must have been, what year was it? Was it 2005 or 2006? You were the top ranked triathlete in the nation.
Yeah, it was 2005 run, USAT, you know, United States Triathlon Association. They rank every year the, they take your top three races, and there's a point system with good quality events, and they rank you. And that year, I just turned 50, I was healthy, felt great. And that particular year, I just had, I think I did not lose a race that entire year, at least age group wise. And as an older athlete, the main thing you have to consider is just staying healthy. And that's the other advantage of training what I call hard, short, fast quality workouts, where every mile counts. The chances of injury are a lot less too, because you're not putting that type of miles in or to injure your body.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, to be top ranked 50-year-old, because that's 50-year-old is still really competitive. You know, I don't know if all of our listeners are aware of that, but I mean, some of the guys that are 50 years old or doing any distance triathlon are amazingly fast. So that was huge for you. So, and I know since then you've had at least one surgery that I'm aware of, because I was there to pick you up after your surgery. So, you know. It's amazing what you've accomplished. Okay, so let's talk about, by the way, if you want to reach Russ, it's what's the website? trylessismore.com, and he's got a couple other URLs, but if you put that in or look for Russ Jones Triathlon Coaching in Google, you'll be able to find
it.
How else can they find
you? Yeah, a very easy email address, coachruss@cox.net. That's coachruss@cox.net. So really easy to remember.
So that's how you can find him. And Russ and I have had lots of conversations about his training philosophy, because anybody that knows Russ and his accomplishments are, you know, curious about how he does it. Number one, it's, you know, his training philosophy makes a lot of sense, but, you know, he's coming from an amazing athletic background. You know, the guy is, you just have to keep that in mind, that he's a 218 marathon guy. So he's got that base to work with, and most of us don't have that kind of athletic background. But it works. The Try Less Is More thing works. I've, in my coaching, You know, I tell my athletes all the time, you know, if you want to race fast, you got to train fast. So give us the basic rundown. You know, when you've got a new triathlete, you know, what is it you're sort of trying to get them to do?
Well, most people new in the sport, the story I always tell is the Mark Allen story, because the most valuable commodity that we have, or we don't have, is time. And realistically, 95% of Americans do not have a lot of time to train. Work obligations, family obligations, it's you know, the technology society, even though it's supposed to create more time for us, it's actually given us less time because more people can contact us. So what I try to do is really emphasize, you know, to a new client, that if I'm going to coach you, it's going to hurt a little bit. You have to go out there and do some quality workouts. And in coaching terms, it's called race specificity. So whatever race, if you're going to do a sprint race, you train exactly like the race. For example, if you want to run 7-minute miles, which is, say, a 21-minute 10K, you've got to go out there and do some 7-minute miles in training. You can't expect to go out there and run 9-minute miles and all of a sudden run 7-minute miles. And even it's the same philosophy. If somebody just wants to run 8-minute miles, you know, which is considered kind of a mid-level time for most athletes, 8-minute miles, say a 5K, you still have to go out there and run some 7:30s at pace and intervals and or training to be able to run 8-minute miles in an actual race. But like I said, the story also tells that Mark Allen story, because if you train hard, fast, and intense, you're able to race that fast. And you know, and this is the scientific approach, and there's been numerous studies that show the quality over volume really works. And from a kind of a scientific approach, what happens is, if you train slow and methodical, or just kind of slow training all the time, there's certain cells that just lay dormant in your body, and they need to be fired to be able to race fast. So when you train short, fast, and intense workouts, you actually fire up every cell in your body. And then in the cells, there's a thing called mitochondria, and they're the oxygen-carrying capabilities that help your muscles go faster and last longer. So when a person trains fast, you fire every cell, you get more mitochondria involved, which carries more oxygen. And when your body is able to carry more oxygen to your muscles, then you are able to race fast. So that's the kind of scientific approach.
Yeah. So when you're working with an athlete, is it less is more for swimming, biking, and running? You're just telling them, you know, you don't need to go, you know, you don't need to swim 10,000 yards in the pool a week. You know, swimming 3,000 yards is plenty in a week.
Yeah, when I coach a client, I take four things into consideration. Number one, health and injury issues. Number two, their A races and the races they would like to do. Number three, their strengths and weaknesses. And number four, their parameters of time. Most people can, you know, it's like a window of time. They have an hour Monday through Friday and or say a 2-hour on a weekend. So I take all those parameters under consideration. And what Ron was kind of alluding to was, with that particular question, is if a person comes from a running background and they're a strong runner, I will emphasize the swimming and biking more in their training, especially the less is more part, quality over volume.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess one of the things that I'm kind of curious about that I don't think we've talked about before is periodization. You know, I'm doing the longer stuff, so and I still think the try less is more philosophy can work for longer distance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking primarily sprint and Olympic, but you know, there's guys that spend 30 and 40 hours, you know, training for Ironman races in a week. That's huge volume. But I'm wondering, you know, do you periodize your training? Like right now, we're in the off season. Are you giving them short, even shorter workouts or less intense workouts, or how do you build towards that A race?
Yeah, every athlete, it's, I mean, like in studies after studies, especially with people who work for a living and who are not pros, pros get a chance to have naps. They can pretty much train year round fairly hard, and they also take little breaks. Most athletes have about an 8 to 12 week period where they can train hard and race hard. So there's usually two periods of the entire year racing season where racing is important. April, May, June. So that's like a 3 month period, and September, October. So I give them a chance to rest, like a month off, say either in July or August, where they just go easy. No speed work, no intervals. And also in the winter time, November, December range, where they just go easy. You know, they do, just do enough to keep the weight low, to keep some type of aerobic fitness and rest their bodies. It's kind of what the squirrels do in the wintertime. You know, they hibernate. I think as people and as athletes, we need like a month or 6 weeks to just kind of lay low, relax, enjoy our families, gain a few pounds, because we cannot train hard intense year round. The body will just break down. And I know, for example, people who try to do that year round, train hard, it breaks their immune system down, they get sick more, and number two, they get injured more. So we need these little downtimes, these little month to 6 weeks off, midsummer and or in the winter time, to lay low, just do some easy training, enjoy our family. You know, we're gonna gain a few pounds, but that's natural, and then we get revitalized, and they can fire up either for a new season and or some new PRs.
Well, you're clearly in that off season now, because it looks like you've gained about 10 pounds since where you were for Worlds. But I shouldn't talk, because I've packed it on since too. What about, you know, one of the things that people always want to know in triathlon is nutrition. Now, I pretty much know your race nutrition, and we've talked about this here at TriChatter a number of times as well, where, you know, for the shorter races, you know, particularly sprints, you don't need to take a lot of nutrition. It's interesting when you see, you know, people have got, you know, goo packets all over the place and bananas taped to their top bar and stuff for a sprint race. What is your pre-race nutrition strategy, and then race day nutrition strategy?
When you're doing sprints in Olympic distance and or less, like a 2 hour or less event, the night before is the most important meal, and straight carbs. My little niche in life or food, what I take the night before, is just plain white rice and a can of beans. It works. Little funny story. Gosh, it's like 25 years ago, I was at the National Biathlon Finals, and we got late into New York. It was like midnight. The only thing that was open was a Chinese restaurant, and I'd never had Chinese food in my entire life. So all I had was a big bucket of plain white rice, and the next day, I ended up getting second next to Jeff Devlin, who won a lot of Ironmans, third at Kona 1 year. I was like, gosh, like 20 seconds behind him. So that's been my regimen over the years. The night before, just take a straight carbohydrate, no meat, no chicken, just straight carbs. And when it comes to the morning of the event, I do not eat anything. I like to have a flat, empty stomach. And the main reason is, from a scientific approach or a coaching approach, your body has enough fuel from the day before and the night before to last minimum of an hour and a half up to 2.5 hours. Just on the previous night or the previous day's glycogen supply and or carbohydrates, which is enough fuel to, like I said, to last up about 2 hours in an event. So during an event, you can actually get away with water. If it's a hot day, of course, you need sodium and maybe some Gatorade. But in the sense of actual food, all you really need in a sprint and even up to an Olympic distance, is maybe like a banana or one gel pack.
Yeah, so you don't need a lot. It's like I say, it's always interesting, you know, that people are so concerned about that with these shorter races. Okay, so I remember, what was the story? had a little story. No, shoot, I'm not remembering what it was now. It'll come to me.
All right. Well, less is more. Is even, you know, what Ron was saying, you know, on the weight issue on the bike, it's the same thing in eating. The morning of the race, less is more works too. You drink, of course you need fluid. Don't cut back on the fluid, especially in the morning of a race. You need at least 32 ounces of good solid fluid the morning you eat, sprint, long distance, whatever it is. But on the food, less is definitely more when it comes to the morning of the event.
Yeah. If you've ever been around Russ when he races, and I've had that privilege a number of times, Russ is one of those guys that puts it out there more than anybody you'll ever know. It doesn't, you know, when he's on the race course, it's not like it's easy for him. It's not like he's just swimming, biking, and running, and, you know, he doesn't make it look easy. When he's around you, you know it. And I remember one race in particular at Pacific Coast Triathlon. I forget how many years ago it was, but in this particular race, you start down at the ocean level, obviously, you do the swim, but there's a huge ramp that you run up to get to the transition area. And then on the backside of the run, there's another ramp that you have to go up. This was one of those years that I was in a different age group than Russ. He's a little bit older than me. I'm better looking than he is, but he's a little bit older than I am. But I remember in this particular race, I started in the group ahead of him. It was either one group or maybe even two groups ahead of him. And so I'm going up the second ramp, and it's a very steep hill to get back up to the street level. And I'm not even running at this point. I'm walking and holding my knees to help me push my way up this hill. And behind me, I hear this thing that kind of sounds like a freight train. And I didn't even need to look to know who it was, because when Russ is coming at you, you hear him coming. You know, he is breathing so hard. Everybody around knows it's him. And then he just blew right by me like I was standing still, and I'm sure won the race. But how is it that you manage to push yourself that hard? Does it just come natural?
Yeah.
Or what?
It comes very natural.
I mean, you're foaming at the mouth sometimes, literally. I mean, you know, people just don't push themselves that hard. It's just incredible.
In sprints, to be successful in sprints, I treat each event as an all-out event. Now, I'm not saying this for my clients. I mean, God has given me a good gift of a high anaerobic threshold where I can almost race at my maximum heart rate for an hour or darn close to it. And so I can go at each, I treat each event as an individual event. I don't pace myself. I go all out in the swim, all out on the bike, and all out in the run. And to be at a national class level, at least in sprints, you have to go that way. No longer events, it's completely different. You have to pace yourself. And, you know, funny story that Ron just told, because when I was 1 minute behind Mark Allen, they were actually interviewing him after the race. And he said, there was this guy, he sounded like a steam engine at the turnaround, so I had to pick up my pace because I knew this guy was gaining on me. So even back then, 25 years ago, Mark Allen noticed.
That's so great. You know, another thing that I'm interested in is your philosophy on weight training, strength training, and do you prescribe that to your athletes?
I certainly do, especially in the wintertime. Now, during the actual year, if they only have 7 to 10 hours a week, to get faster in triathlons, you have to swim, bike, run. It depends on the athlete. If they're either retired or they work part-time during the actual racing season, you have to swim, bike, and run. You have to do intervals. Now, during the wintertime, their slow season, where they don't have to swim and they're indoors more, then I prescribe a little bit of weight training, but just enough to tone. For swimmers, I always tell them to do lat pulls. For if they're a little weak on the bike, do leg extensions. It's not a big program, but you know, over the years, I've done very little weight training because the major reasons, I just don't have the time. you know, with the family and the kids and the obligations. And there's only, and as an athlete, like I said, the most valuable thing we have is our time. So you have to figure out where can you get your best bang for your buck on your time and training. And to do well in triathlons, you still have to swim, bike, and run. So fourth down the list would be weight training and gym training if you do have the time. So it really depends on the client, on how much time. If they have 2 hours during the week and a 3 to 4 hour gap on the weekend, then I would throw in some weight gym training. But if they only have an hour during the week and a 2 hour window on a weekend, then I would just have them swim, bike, and run. So it really depends on the athlete and on the time, because when people have more time, of course, you can add more things to their training program, especially weight training. But like I said, most athletes who have family and work obligations, they have very little time to train.
Yeah. So, Russ, you've done, you've been to the Worlds the last 2 years. You went to Australia last year, and you went to Hungary this year, and it's China next year, right?
But China next year.
You're not going to go next year.
No, mainly because it's China. And, well, there's two reasons. Number one, Beijing, at that time of year, it's not like the Olympics. They're going to close the entire city down. The water's not going to be that clean. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. You know, so you have to kind of pick and choose your races if you want. Now, if you're independently wealthy and you don't have to work, and then it's fine to travel, because when you do travel to these worldwide events, it's very expensive. So you kind of pick the events that are kind of more touristy, like Australia. They're fun places to go. So you combine a little vacation with the actual event.
Yeah. So 2011, what are you planning on doing and what are your goals?
Well, 2011, I'm actually thinking of getting back into my old duathlon career. Back to Ron's question on my racing focus this year. My big race this year will be the USATS, the Triathlon Federation National Championships in either Vermont and New Hampshire in August, which is actually a world qualifier for New Zealand in 2012. But I'm actually thinking about, well, I will go to Arizona this year, Tucson. That's where the National Duathlon Championships are. And I haven't done that, gosh, in 20 years. And that's actually a world qualifier for the World Championships in Spain in early September, which sounds a lot more fun and enjoyable than going to China. So that's a good possibility.
September of 2011?
2011.
Oh, fun. And that's in Tucson?
The national championships are the last weekend in April. It's a 5K, 40K, 5K, which is perfect for me. It's not too long of a run, so it's very manageable with all the wear and tear on my legs. And that is a world qualifier for the World 2011 Duathlon Championships in a little town on the Atlantic in Spain called Dijon, like in the mustard.
So how do you, maybe I want to do this. How do I qualify for the race in Tucson?
The race in Tucson, anybody can sign up.
Oh, I can sign up. Is it full?
Even Ron could sign up. Even at his old age, it's how slow he is. Ron could even sign up.
Cool. I may do that. That'd be fun. I mean, duathlon's not my strength, but hey, I did one duathlon this year.
And you did
and
well.
I came in second only to you.
Yeah, you did well.
Yeah, so.
Well, to be a good triathlete, you can't have a weak sport. You've got to be, and, you know, it's actually good for triathletes whose strength is swimming, and if they want to do very well in a triathlon, it's actually good for them to do, you know, maybe one or two duathlons a year, because then they got to compete at a higher level in the age group to do well, because they are taking out the strong sport. You know, because if you want to be a top age group, you cannot have a weak sport, you cannot have an Achilles heel. So it's actually good to do some events that, you know, your Achilles heel is part of the event.
Yeah, well, and my biggest weakness is the bike. So, yeah, that might be kind of fun. Maybe I'll look into that. We'll talk about that offline, and I'll get the dates on it and so on. That could be kind of cool. Well, I can't think of anything else to ask you. I appreciate you filling in for Sherry today. Sherry, I hope you feel better, get your voice back. But it's been great, Russ. TryLessIsMore.com. And what was it again? Coach Russ?
Coach Russ at Cox.net.
And, of course, tune in here, Triathica.com. And the Triathica Academy is coming very soon. And you can reach me at Ron@Triathica.com. So we'll see you all next week.